Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show is the Copyright Forum, and joining us today, Paul Rapp, Polly Law, and Bill Westwood. They are here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, your music, your art. If you have a question about copyright law or what's in the public domain, give us a call. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 1-800-348-2551. Paul, Polly, Bill, your copyright calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show is the Copyright Forum, and to answer your questions, we've assembled our great panel. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for Metro Land Right. You've heard this before. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators, a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is a past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Massachusetts. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp, welcome back all.
Thank you.
How's everybody doing?
Good. Hanging in.
Good.
You know, you might want to just correct that. I've moved from the Berkshires. I now live in Kingston.
Kingston!
Oh, really?
Or as we like to call it, the Hudson Valley.
Yes.
And so, why don't you take that up with the script department, but I'll write here anyway. Hudson.
My people will have lunch with the script department people.
When did you move? I knew you were trying.
I've been kind of moving gradually for 2 years.
Oh,
But I'm there permanently.
You like it? Everything good for you there?
I love it. A place just opened around the corner that serves beer and oysters.
Ah.
That's it.
Okay. Well, how
good. Beer and...
So you're not really working now. You're just going with that every day?
I'm living a bivalve existence.
Good for you. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Let's jump right to the phones. Nick in Mechanicville. Nick, you're on. Oh, that's not
a
good start.
I hope that my question isn't too vague. My question is, say you have an idea, for instance, for an app that you want to get made, but you don't have any material resources to go about doing that yourself, what would be the best way to try and get that made while protecting your idea so that maybe whoever you went to didn't take it and run with it without you or something like that?
Hang on, Nick. Are you flying a crop duster? What's going on?
Admittedly, I'm driving through some slush, and my car's muffler needs to be fixed.
Okay. Well, let's go on with the question then. All right, okay. Paddle.
Well, you can, Nick, you can only copyright or register the copyright on something that actually exists. You can't copyright an idea.
Right, but I think contractually he could protect his idea, yeah, and hire somebody to create it for him.
Yes.
Yeah, if you found an app developer that was willing to play ball for a piece of the proceeds, you would have him sign what's called a non-disclosure agreement, in which you say, "Look, I'm going to disclose this concept to you, and you're gonna work on it, and you know, and in return, you're not going to disclose this to anybody, you know, without my permission." And that's just a personal contract between you and the app developer. It has nothing to do with copyright or trademark or patent or anything.
But could he also? I mean, I almost hate to say these words. Could he do a work-for-hire contract with the app developer?
Yeah,
I know.
He could, but I think Paul's idea is better, unless he's got money to pay the app developer.
Yeah, and he just said he doesn't have a lot of money, and he's got to get his muffler fixed.
Yeah.
And so, I would see if you could find an app developer, ask around, and find one that's got a good reputation, and then see if he'll play ball with you.
Well, thank you for your answer. That was really informative, and I hope you guys have a great afternoon.
Great.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum today. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp here. Paul Rapp of the Hudson Valley, if you're scoring at home. Joseph and Saugerties. Joseph, you're on.
Hi, I appreciate you taking the call. So I'm a fine artist. My work is purely abstract. Some years ago on Facebook, I found somebody in Italy claiming that one of my paintings was his.
Really?
I tracked him down, and he's, you know, the back and forth. He said, "Oh, we could make T-shirts. That would be great." And I threatened litigation. Of course, I had no idea what I was talking about. And he deleted his page. So fast forward. I work with galleries in Manhattan and Florida and Nantucket. I have, it seems like a Herculean task to go through and try and copyright all of the images that I've created. So I'm looking for some suggestions. How, you know, can I protect paintings? How would I do that?
Yes. Well, first of all, keep in mind the work is copyrighted when you create it. The issue is registering that copyright with the Copyright Office, which gives you the legal
protection
and biting power to go after somebody that is infringing that work. Now, I don't know in Paul, what's the latest on what constitutes publication, because it's possible he could do some group registrations.
Yeah, I mean, unless you've been making posters and a lot of prints, you can register them at this point 10 at a time if they are...
For one fee.
If they are, quote, unpublished, unquote. And merely posting an image on the internet is not considered publication.
No, that's interesting.
Offering it for sale in a gallery is, though.
No,
not the original.
Oh, really?
Not the original. It's not
really
a reproduction. Yeah.
Okay, I thought that was considered publication.
No.
Okay.
That's considered display, but it's not considered publication.
Right.
So, unless you've, sold a couple hundred note cards or prints or giclées or something like that, you can consider them unpublished and you can register them 10 at a time. Now,
it's
$55
right now is the registration.
So, even a unique image, if you had 10 very different images, those could be registered in a bundle?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
You have to make sure that you keep track of what image is in what bundle so that if you need to, if, say, someone else comes by and starts pilfering your images, you can say, "Sorry, buddy, these are registered," and you can pull up the registration certificate because you know which bundle it's in.
And in a given list, you would identify it with some distinctive name.
And include a thumbnail.
And what I do is on the ones that I send off, I include a thumbnail, like Polly said, so that I remember what it is, because sometimes if I've done 43 kidneys, I don't remember which one is which.
Right. Untitled kidney number 42.
Right.
I have that one. It's in our living room.
Very good.
And you know, and you can be selective on what you, you sound like you're a prolific artist. And, it's kind of a crapshoot, but, I would put up the effort and the expense of registering the things that you think, might have legs, that might be vulnerable to copying, to things that could be published and are getting a lot of attention on the internet and social media.
Although I will say, if I'd followed that rule...
You'd be a lot poorer.
That's right. Everything that I'm getting, that I'm chasing down as infringements, are on several illustrations that... In 1999, when I created them, I would not have bet a plug nickel that they would ever be reused again.
I think I know
which one
you were talking about.
All right, but
it's not the most appealing.
No. Ray has his finger on the button.
It ain't no kidney. Point. All right, let's put it that way. All right, Joseph, thanks a lot for the call. Now, when you batch copyright, say 10 paintings, let's say this guy did paintings, you're taking pictures, right? Digital pictures,
yes. Right.
You're not just copywriting the digital image, though, right? You're copywriting
the actual painting. Yeah.
The image. Yep. Yeah.
And so you want to have as good and as true a photograph as you can. I mean, you have to have the lighting well done and have a good digital rendering. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be super high res, but it should be accurate in terms of color and content.
Now, if I went into a museum and snapped a picture or a gallery and snapped a picture of this guy's mm-hmm. work, mm-hmm. that's mine?
The image itself is, but you can't reproduce
but,
it.
But if you decide, oh, wow, this is really cool, I'm going to put it on T-shirts, or I'm going to start making
tote bags
or gift cards out of it.
Lunchboxes in Japan.
Lunchboxes.
Lunchboxes in Japan have pictures of kidneys on them. Cha-ching, eh, Bill?
Touche.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Yes, there's money in kidneys. We'll talk about it coming up. And welcome back to Vox Pop, the Copyright Forum. Paul Rapp, Polly Law, Bill Westwood are here to answer your questions. The number is 1-800-348-2551. And, oh, this email came in from our friend Margo. Margo writes, I have just recently been making collages with my old photographs, which is also incorporating cut-up images from magazines, old books, calendars, greeting cards, etc. I hope to sell these as well. Question. In cutting up a recent calendar, I noticed the images were copyrighted, so I decided not to use those. But then it got me wondering if I could even use some of the other images. Is there a difference if it is an image of a public building like the Statue of Liberty versus a drawing of flowers that someone created? Your advice, please. And that's from Margo.
Well, collage is a swamp of copyright issues. Mm. If she is just going to be selling them in galleries, she has no problem whatsoever unless she puts like a Disney character on there.
Yeah, if she's selling the originals.
If she's selling the originals. If she wants to reproduce them in any way and sell the reproductions.
That raises other questions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you've got a copyrighted image, it's the predominant image in your collage, you might have problems. But generally, it's going to be, I think, fair use because it's transformative and you're using only, all that fair use stuff. So it's probably going to be okay. But those considerations, like Polly said, only come into play when you're doing copies, when you're making prints of your original collage.
How did Andy Warhol make his portraits?
He took photographs.
Okay. Did he take the photographs?
I doubt it.
Because, I mean, James Dean was dead. Marilyn Monroe was dead.
Chairman Mao.
Yeah, I think most of them he probably didn't.
I think a lot of people left him alone because they got notoriety out of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Campbell Soup, but...
Didn't Campbell Soup sue him at one point, and then they realized they were getting a whole lot of free publicity?
Yeah,
I think so, and I think he did get sued and got beat a couple of times, but not enough to make a huge difference.
He still did okay.
He was printing money, basically. Yeah. You know?
This is from Steve. Steve writes, an artist created artwork with me as the subject, but I never signed a model release or got paid as a model. If the artist wishes to show this work publicly, do I have any rights to where, how, and when shown?
Well, if you modeled for an artist... there's, I think, an implied release. You know, if you're sitting there and he's drawing, but, it's not like you don't know.
But I don't know about that. I think most artists that are knowledgeable, artists, require that even if they use like Dahl Taylor, who's in my studio, even when he uses a professional actor for a model. He gets a model release.
He'll get a release.
Yeah, but if this was done in a class, in like a life drawing class.
Well, that might be different if it's life drawing.
And if it's just going to be hung in a gallery and not used commercially, I don't know how much he would have.
I don't know about that. I would check into that a little more closely.
Yeah, but I mean, if like you said, he modeled for the guy, so it's hard to say that he didn't know that his likeness was being used. And as long as it's not being used for, you know, in advertising.
I would still look into it a little more closely.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect, if you get anything out of this, I would not expect a lot.
Okay. I always wondered, Bill, when you do your medical illustrations, do you use cadavers or live people? No, seriously.
Well, I've done both. I mean, obviously, I can't use cadavers all the time because I don't have access to those. But I've, beyond the gross anatomy dissections that I did in medical school, graduate school, I've been involved in dissections many, many times since, and surgery as well. I go to surgery, again, not as much as I used to.
Yikes.
You sometimes use photographs the doctors have taken, haven't you, for reference?
No, not usually. I mean, I have done that, but more often than not, you're not trying to show photographically what's there.
Right.
You're trying to illustrate a procedure.
And make it clear.
And make it understandable, the various steps. Now, if you're doing anatomy, straight anatomy, like you're going to do a heart or something like that, then you're going to go and look for some type of photograph, either in a textbook or somewhere like that.
If you're drawing like a surgery and you're looking at somebody's insides, do you get a release from them?
Hey,
I think that one is implied.
You know, Bill Westwood used my goiter.
Before you have a procedure done on you, you usually have to sign a release,
right?
Saying that there may be people other than the doctor in the room.
Correct. And if a surgeon is going to bring me in to illustrate something, they will get that release from the patient.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
My big break.
Back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551.
Can I put this in my resume? Boy.
George in Northern New Jersey, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm an artist, and I want to manufacture it's going to be, the product will be a vacuum form. So there's going to be multiple pieces. It's artistic, and I'm wondering how to protect that.
I would say a copy.
My design in the product.
Is it a product, or is it a piece to be hung on the wall when you're done? Or
it's a product that's going to eventually, the product will be an attachment on clothing.
I think this might be
a design.
Well, I don't
know.
I mean, like a jewelry type piece on clothing or what? We're not clear on what you're...
Okay, it's going to be something you fasten to a hat, okay?
Okay, well, I'm assuming it might be a craft product that might be copyrightable.
Yeah, I mean, if it's... the problem with clothing is a lot of times the copyright office will say that it's functional, that function is driving the design, and therefore it can't be copyrighted because copyrighted materials have to be non-functional. But if what you're doing is purely decorative, I think you could register the copyright for it.
It's a decorative piece, yes.
It's a decorative piece,
okay.
So yeah.
Then,
and you're going to be more or less...
doesn't function. It ain't like an umbrella attached to a hat, a ball cap.
Right.
It's a decorative piece. It adds to the character of the social.
Sure. Sure. Well, then you would...
you're going to mass produce them from a mold or something like that.
Yeah, right. Vacuum form machine.
Well, I don't see why you couldn't register that. Take a picture of it when it's done.
A finished piece.
And submit it to the Copyright Office.
As a three-dimensional artwork.
Take
a couple of photographs showing it from the back, from the top, you know, the whole shoot and match.
All right, George, thank you very much. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's the Copyright Forum today on Vox Pop. Paul Rapp, Polly Law, Bill Westwood here to answer your questions. And Lawrence in Great Barrington. Lawrence, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Hey.
Yeah, so I'm publishing a book, and at the moment I've bought an ISBN number for it and have gone through a person helping me self-publish, and I was curious if I need to register for copyright still.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the ISBN number merely tracks it for, reasons of commerce, when it sells it. it can be tracked by the various vendors, but it has nothing to do with copyright. So if you want to, you know, actually protect the content of your book from infringement, you will want to register the copyright.
Yes. And you can do it now.
Yeah, I would do it as soon as you have a finished manuscript.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's definitely finished. It's almost ready for printing. So
do it now.
Okay, that's good to know. And then is that a simple process?
Yeah, fairly simple.
It can be annoying.
Have a glass of wine next to you.
Relax.
And go to copyright.gov.
Yeah, the
okay.
There's a they have a sample that you can work your way through initially. It's not terrible,
but it's a single work by a single author. It's going to be it'll be straightforward.
Right,
but if it's 500 page book, that's
you just register the manuscript.
But you have to. Actually, they have to have all the words, right?
Yeah,
the
you order. Have to, right.
Yeah, you have to send PDFs.
You can upload a PDF.
Okay. That's not a problem, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, copyright.gov.
Yep. Yes. Right. And I don't know if you've had a cover design yet. Will have to...
I have.
Okay, that will have to go with it as part of the package.
Okay. Right.
Is that something you designed yourself, or did you have someone else design that for you?
I had someone else design it for me.
Okay. So was your arrangement with them that you would hold the copyright, or do they maintain the copyright?
That's a good question. I don't remember talking about that clearly with them.
Okay.
I'll get back to them on that.
Unless the cover is really striking.
Yeah.
I mean, what's really important is the content of the book.
Well, I understand, but I think from a business perspective, he should go back and get that sorted out with,
artist
or designer.
Yeah.
And then get a contract that reflects that, just to make sure that there's no question if this should become a million seller. You don't want somebody else coming back and saying, "Wow, you didn't pay me enough."
Gotcha. Well, that's very helpful. I appreciate your input. Thank you.
Thanks
good luck.
Good luck with the book. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. The Copyright Forum today. Michelle in Stockbridge. Michelle, you're on. Oh, it's Micheline. I'm sorry.
Yes.
You're on.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
Okay. My question is this. I am about to embark on a translation of a book which was written in German in 1943 and went out of print in 1966, but it is still published in the French language by in Paris by a publishing house. I want to know how long is a book in the public domain. And I want to know, I believe that when a book has been written in a language and it doesn't exist anymore, you can translate it from the next language in which it still exists. Am I right?
Okay.
No.
Before we answer, is it possible for you to turn your radio down just a little bit?
Oh, yes, just a second.
Okay, that would be great, because it's just a reminder to those thinking of calling. It's always good to have the radio turned down. We're on a delay. Zach, the engineer, gets very upset, and it makes me nervous, frankly. Micheline, are you back?
Yes.
Hi, okay, go ahead.
If it's still in print.
I want to know. I am about to engage into the translation of a book into English.
Yes.
It was never published.
Yes, we heard that already.
We got it. We got it.
But the
you got everything.
Paul Rapp, our intellectual property lawyer from the Hudson Valley, is going to give it a shot. Go ahead, Paul.
If it's, I don't know. You'll want to find out whether it's in the public domain or not, and not knowing...
Yes, I want to know how long is a book in the public domain.
Well, it depends where it was originally published and what their registration procedures were.
It would have been under the Berne Convention, I would assume.
Well, depending on when the country joined the Berne Convention, and the United States didn't until 1990.
But if it's in French
but if it's in French,
German...
Yeah, but I don't know French or German. There's every reason to believe. And well, I think
see,
you can.
I contacted the French company.
Yeah.
They can't give me the right because they have the rights only for the French language. They've been publishing since 1951, mm-hmm. and it's still going strong in France. Mm-hmm. But the book does not exist anymore in English, in German. It was published in 1943, and the publishing house closed, and I guess the gentleman who wrote died because even when I Googled the name, there is nothing, there is no publishing house. I tried to reach the German. Eventually, somebody told me there was no more publication in German. So I want to know what I can do.
I don't know what to tell you. I think you're going to want to have someone investigate. And it sounds like you've done a very good job, you know, on your own investigating. It sounds like...
Oh, I have investigated.
Yeah, and it does sound like perhaps it sounds like it may be in the public domain, in which case you're free to do a translation and publish it yourself.
That's what I think.
But I would, you know, I would want to nail that down.
Yeah, I would contact a...
Because sometimes, you see, you don't have... It doesn't have to be in the public domain. You see, for instance, I translated a book many years ago into French from English, which was a very successful, it was a bestseller for 20 years in France, and I still get money every year because it's at the program of the elementary schools. It was a book called Summer Hill by A.S. Neal. Well, they told me at one point, you can take back and do what you want with your book.
Well,
there is a moment when you can do what you want with it.
I would contact a copyright attorney who could investigate this for you and make sure that you can translate it. You know, it sounds like it's certainly possible because if rights don't exist in German or...
That's right.
Well, you said the French publisher said they only have the rights to publish this in France.
That's right. They can't give me the rights because I wrote to them.
But you might ask them who they got the rights from.
Correct. And
they got it from the Germans. The book came out in 1943 in Switzerland, in Zurich, and they got the rights in 1951. But they told me they don't know who can give me the rights.
I think the advice to contact a copyright lawyer is very much
and let them investigate and get because it sounds
is it
like
easy to find a copyright lawyer is
sure
easy to
it's,
find?
It's impossible.
No, they're out there. Yep. In fact, Paul Rapp is one, but there are many out there. And
what name did you say is one?
Oh, well, Paul Rapp, who spoke to you first, is a copyright attorney. And his contact information, if you go to wamc.org/voxpop, you will find his contact information right there.
You can also...
WAMC?
That's our radio station.
WAMC box what?
WAMC.org. That's us. That's our radio station. Then the program...
.org, yes.
Yep. And then the program... is Vox Pop, VOXPOP. And if you go to WAMC.org/VoxPop, you'll find a link to all the panelists on today's program, one of which is an intellectual property copyright lawyer, Paul Rapp from the Hudson Valley.
Okay.
All right. Most interesting call.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Okay. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, Paul Rapp, we're all here, and there's more to come. Yes, Count Basie and the orchestra here on Vox Pop, WAMC's call-in program. It's the Copyright Forum today. Polly Law, Bill Westwood, Paul Rapp here on the panel. This email from, this is from Andy Warhol's nephew, James, concerning copyright. Campbell's did not want anything from my uncle. In fact, they turned down any paintings he offered to them as gifts, actually sent him two complimentary cases of soup in return. As for other copyright trouble, yes, a few times come to mind. His flower paintings and his Jackie paintings had to be settled with the photographer since he borrowed those images. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he always shot his own photographs for the portraits.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
That's great. Thanks for that one.
Thank you for that.
This is from Diane in Clifton Park. Subject heading, is copyright registration sufficient for table/board games? I create board and group games. Already copyrighted some. I use my own photos and design work. I feel my directions for play are what I am actually copywriting, but wonder if this is enough to keep someone from using my ideas, but just changing it somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, you're by registering the directions, you're registering how you can register. It's your expression of what the directions are, but not the directions themselves. Yeah, if that makes sense.
That's a process.
And so games, I think, tend to be patented.
Yeah.
You know, you can copyright the look and feel of the board and the verbatim directions. But that's about all you're going to get, and the functionality of the game.
But if you had a fairly distinct looking board,
then
take a picture of that, register that, and that's going to give you some protection.
Yeah, and if you've got 3D characters or playing cards or anything like that, definitely those. But you can't copyright the process of playing the game.
The idea of the game, yeah.
Very interesting. So one of my big exciting things on the calendar is that there's going to be a new Godzilla version of Monopoly coming out in April.
Okay.
Live it up.
Now they
Is this where Godzilla just can go through?
No, this is a board game.
Yeah, but he can collect $200 anytime he wants?
Well, probably.
Something like that.
But what I'm saying is they would still have to pay for that.
Oh, yeah.
For using Monopoly, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they've paid quite a chunk of change to the Hasbro company to license the...
I thought it was Parker Brothers.
I thought it was Hasbro. Well, to whomever owns it.
Yeah, well, that's going to be exciting, though. So next time you're here, if you're here after the spring, we'll have the Godzilla Monopoly game
I can just
down.
See these little plastic hotels going up in flames on your board. You know?
I can't wait. The concept will be better than the game, no doubt. Let's go to Howard in New Paltz. Howard.
Yeah, hi. I brought this up to you guys a couple of years ago, I did a mural in a restaurant here in New Paltz, an Italian restaurant.
I remember.
And, you got a good memory. A friend of mine kept going and kept telling me, you know, whoever went over your work left a lot of what you did. And I went in there one night, and then one of the waiters said to me, oh, yeah, somebody came in asking me about this this mural that I did. Now, I don't know if this person can get the credit for it or can I still do something about it? Because a lot of it that I did was left there, but she kind of like went over it, changed it a little bit, but a lot of the design is still there. Is there anything that I can do about that?
Is VAGA still in force?
Vera? Believe me, that's a long, hard slog.
It's a toothless.
What is it? Vera?
Visual Artist Rights Act.
You know, and it's...
That has to do with original pieces as opposed to reproductions.
Right. And pieces being destroyed that are...
Originals.
That are publicly displayed.
Yeah.
Oh, what was that called again? I couldn't get it fast enough.
The Visual Artist Rights Act, V-A-R-A. But it's...
Visual Artist Rights Act?
Act.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a law that's been around since around 1990. I litigated a major case in the 90s against the state of New York. And it's just, you know, there's so many hoops you got to jump through and things you've got to establish and prove that it can be difficult. I mean, some artists have really benefited from that when their public art has been destroyed. But it's tough.
I have photographs from before, you know, I have a couple of photographs from before. So, I mean, that's a plus for me, I guess, right?
What kind of a agreement did you have with the restaurant owner? Do you have a contract? Or was it just a verbal?
No, not really. It was
a verbal, handshake.
Yeah. And then he called me back years later. He says, I want you to change the design a little bit. And I was about to go over there, and then he calls me up and says, well, Uncle Louie says he wants to have somebody else do it.
Oh, you...
oh, tangling with Uncle Louie.
Oh boy.
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah, that's you know, unfortunately, these things get into these kinds of messes because it was not a contract originally that stated who owned what and what, you know, those rights would be. So it becomes very muddy and difficult, I think, to pursue.
All right, Howard, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum today. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, Polly Law are here to answer your questions. And Russell in Clifton Park. Russell.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How and ladies. How is everyone?
Good.
We're fine. Thank you.
This is a trademark question. My company name is trademarked, and I recently found another company on the internet who just reversed the two words in my company name and are calling them that. Same industry.
Mm. Same industry. Infringement? Yeah, generally that's going to be considered infringement, you know, if it's just two words and they're superimposed. The majority of the cases, I mean, not always, sometimes, you know, sometimes when you reverse the words, the commercial meaning, you know, of the second mark is vastly different than the first one. Generally not, though. If you just switch two words, it's, you know, just the words are switched. So it sounds like it's likely an infringement situation. Yeah.
Is that something? I'm sorry, say it again.
Are they operating in the same geographic area as you are, or are you on the internet and they're kind of everywhere?
Well, I found them on the internet. I'm based out of local in the Albany area, but I think they're out of the Midwest, if memory serves.
Okay.
I didn't actually look to see the location. I only saw the name and got a little upset and immediately started thinking, what do I do next?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you want to talk to a intellectual property attorney and have him, you know, talk to you about what your rights are. And if it's warranted, send out a cease and desist letter and tell them they got to change their name back.
All right. I appreciate the help. Thank you.
Okay, Russell.
Good luck.
Wasn't there didn't we talk about this on a previous show? There was a restaurant that's been around this area forever, and then it was discovered that there was the same name. What restaurant was that? It's Colony. Oh, my gosh.
I remember the case, but I don't remember the particulars.
I had a case involving a restaurant in Colony that was using as its logo.
Oh, that was it. Was it the Barnsider?
Yeah, I'm not sure I even mentioned, but it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a design that my clients, you know, the father, who's long deceased, was a famous designer. And it was just, they've been using it for 40 years.
Yeah.
And the paper trail of how they came about it was cold.
So nothing can be done in that situation?
Not really, no. I mean, I think we made some kind of, you know...
you reach an agreement in that
case.
Yeah,
but it wasn't, you know. I mean, and you know, there's no reason to get lotto fever over something like that, right?
Lotto fever.
You know, because there was no evidence that it was willful on their part.
Right.
You know.
Interesting. All right, back to the phones we go. Garrett in Copaic. Garrett.
Hi. Hi. I'm a photographer, and I increasingly am tormented by... situations where my kids are going on a field trip, let's say, or even the school itself will just send out an agreement that pretty much says, if you don't agree to let them be photographed so that we can use them on social media, then your child can't participate. Now, the school doesn't say that, but a lot of these field trip venues will say that. And I'm struck by the disturbing parallel. I'm not sure if you're familiar with what's happening with the Oculus in New York City, that new statue sculpture building.
Yeah.
Where they issued a social media, it's hidden on their website. It's not even displayed at the venue. But if you photograph it, share it on social media, they reserve the right not only to share it, but to download it, keep it, and use it again whenever they please.
Yeah.
Mm. So I'm like telling photographers, don't photograph the Oculus. But this thing with the... It's like people just go and find some generic agreement online, and they're so one-sided. And I'm like, I've been trying to find a better example, and I didn't know if you may have come across a more holistic or more balanced photo permission thing that is not so abusive to the participants.
I'm sure there is one, but they, you know, I mean, they want to minimize their risk to the absolute extreme degree. And so they are going to write a contract that you know, seems onerous and over-lawyered and
I don't even think it's risk. They want to maximize the amount of money they can monetize those
too.
Images.
But they, you know, they don't want to get sued for having somebody's image on a catalog, which is understandable. But I mean, you know, I'm sure many lawyers would be able to write, you know, more understandable in English without any Latin or heretofores and a lot of semicolons, you know, an agreement that makes sense and does the job. But, you know, large institutions, you know, don't operate on those principles.
All right, Garrett, thank you. 800-348-2551, the Copyright Forum on Vox Pop. And Bill Westwood is here, Poly Law, Paul Rapp as well. We go over to Dorothy, who is in the car. Hello, Dorothy.
Hi. Oh, my gosh. This whole program is so incredible. I was just dropped a friend off at Bradley Field, and I'm on my way in Hartford, and I'm on my way home to Vermont, and I had to stop. I'm parked in some hotel. I don't know where the hell I am. But anyway, I wanted to get in on this conversation because my husband, who was an incredible artist, although we were I was a performer and he was a stagehand, and that's how we met. But I want to get on to his artwork.
Yeah.
He passed away, unfortunately, from a malignant brain tumor 7 months ago. And I now have 1,400 prints of a 9/11 painting that he did that he wanted to donate the first one framed to the fire engine department in the Broadway area of station number 54. And I have all these prints of that particular painting that he did was egg tempera and took him 10 years to paint. And it's a big painting that actually just won an award. And the fellow who gave him that first place in an art gallery wants to display that artwork in his museum in New Hampshire. So all of a sudden, I don't know what to do with these prints. I don't know what to do. Oh, I mean, the painting's hanging in my house right now. But it's a very large painting. It's about 3.5 by 4.5 feet. And I said, I guess what I can do is give it to him on a rental. I don't know what to do. So
okay.
I'm asking you folks.
Thank you, Dorothy. You can consign the original art to the gallery.
Okay.
That means that if you can either say, you know, you can't sell it, but if you do sell it, I get 50%. That's the usual split, 50-50, between the gallery and the artist. The prints, I would suggest...
Selling them at the gallery.
Selling them at the gallery.
Right. On the same basis, you know.
Right.
Or 20, let them take 25%, you know, something
right.
like that. But, you know, why not?
Okay, so... And this would all happen after the thing he wanted to do was present, well, I'm going to have to do it now. I've already talked to the fire station. I would present the fire station in the Broadway area where we work together. And then he wanted to give the other 90 or 94, however, there are a number of fire stations. He wanted to give them to them because of 9/11.
Sure.
Then,
okay.
Then we could do that. And then I love this idea. Thank you so much for the suggestion because I just had no idea what to do. That's fantastic.
Okay.
I love that. And that's what I will do.
And I would suggest,
have one more question.
I would suggest getting get your social media fire started on this one.
Right.
Because, you know, the more it goes viral, the more prints you're going to sell.
And register this with the Copyright Office.
Oh,
definitely.
Yes.
Right away.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay.
Register the painting with the copyright.
Right. The image,
Take a good quality image, though. Dorothy, thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rob in Turner's Falls. Rob.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
So I am curious if there is a way to protect yourself with short phrases of one or two sentences for the purpose of bumper sticker or T-shirt printing?
No. I get that all the time. I've been getting a lot of people with campaign phrases that they want to put on T-shirts. you can protect them, but the name of the company has to be that phrase.
Ah.
So, you know, if you have 20 different phrases that you want to protect, you're going to have to start 20 different companies to sell.
And legitimately so, or just fake companies?
Well,
a wholly owned subsidiary.
A DBA is enough?
That's not my place to judge.
All right. Are you okay there, Polly?
Yeah.
You need a lozenge?
No. Nah.
Okay. We're almost done anyway. You'll be fine. Yeah. Ray in Woodstock, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I got a quick question. This is regarding an idea for a painting I wanted to work on and potentially become a mural. And it would incorporate images of famous Americans, deceased and some not deceased. But it wouldn't be exact likenesses, but when you look at them, you would recognize the person, but it wouldn't, like I say, it wouldn't be exact. Is that problematic? Do I need to get rights from, you know, the estates of deceased people, or what, you know, how should I approach this?
Nope. You can just go ahead. If you're using photographs as references, you don't want to copy any one photograph too closely. You want to use three or four photographs of a particular person as references and do a composite. But for a piece of art, which this sounds like, there's these are public, you know, famous public people. There's no need to get permissions.
Oh, yeah.
No need to get their permissions to put their likenesses on pieces of art.
Okay. For example, if one is known, if there's like a pose, you know, you might not recognize the features, but the pose is recognizable. Is that something that would be problematic? You look at it. Oh yeah, that's. I know who that person is just by the way they're standing. Is that an issue?
Well, as long as it's not Michael Jackson going for a dunk, because then you're going to step on Nike's
Michael
toes.
Michael Jordan
or Michael Jordan.
Michael Jackson may have gone for a dunk.
Michael Jackson going for a dunk. You could.
You could do that.
You have to
be careful, because if somebody took a particular photograph and that photograph looks too much like the photograph the photographer made, then it becomes an infringement.
Yeah, okay.
Well, oh, okay, I see.
Tell you what.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks. Let's just cut our losses. We'll end the show here. I want to thank Bill Westwood and Polly Law, Paul Rapp for joining us today. Support comes from Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz, presenting the Dungeons & Dragons-based drama by Kei Gwynn, She Kills Monsters, February 27th through March 8th, Parker Theater, newpaltz.edu. Bergeron, oh, God. All right, Paul Rapp finally got me. Bergeron Electrical Services, for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley in Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more. BergeronElectrical.net. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. You had Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes. Ah, Paul Rapp. All right, start again. Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready. And one more time. Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low in embodied carbon. Traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. Well, that's the last time we're going to do the copyright form. I have fully had enough of all of these people. Stand by for the book show.